Welcome to the Tim Hill Podcast. If you have the time, you can not only listen to the episodes, but you can also watch all the shows, and you'll find the links in the description below. Thank you.
The Tim Hill Podcasts, ordinary people's extraordinary stories.
Welcome to the Tim Hill Podcast. In this episode, I'm going to have a chat with Blair. So Blair, if you could tell me when and where you were born, and if you can describe to me what it was like where you grew up, the schools you went to, and the education that you received. It's all yours, yeah. Blair.
Thank you. Happy to be with you today, Tim. I've been looking forward to this.
You're welcome.
I was born in North Carolina, which is on the East Coast of the United States. I was born in a small town that is kind of considered Appalachia, if you will. It's up in the mountains of North Carolina in the western part of the state. My father was an architect. My mother was a nurse. And in many ways, I had a rather, I wouldn't necessarily say idyllic, but at least an ordinary life that didn't have a whole lot of trauma in my youth. I was the oldest of five kids. And was good at school, good at sports, in many ways it was a really nice upbringing. I feel like I got a good start in life, if you will. Got a good education in public schools, played sports, football, baseball, basketball, football being American football. Yeah. And as I look back on it, I kind of wish I played tennis because that's a lifelong sport, which I pursue. But I haven't played American football in about 50 years. And all of that time spent doing that.
So what position did you play at?
Played quarterback and defensive back.
All right.
And in fact, I got a partial scholarship to go to college. I went to a little school called Davidson College in near Charlotte, North Carolina. It's a small school, but a well-regarded school. And I got a partial scholarship to play football. And that was one of the reasons that I went there. It was an all-boys school of about 1,000 young men. And that was somewhat shocking, you know, from public school,
from COVID.
And girls and girlfriends and so forth. It was, in many ways, it was an intellectual wasteland. It's how I like to describe it. I expected to be a doctor, but I washed out.
Let's wind it back a little bit. Let's start off at your elementary school.
Yes.
What was that like? Was it a big school? Was it a small school? Small town school?
It was a medium sized school. I guess there were about 500 or 600 kids. And it was a sweet place. It was, you know, good teachers. I don't recall much in the way of bullying or real difficulties with students. I did move from one town to another, and that was a little bit traumatic, as you can imagine.
Being a new kid on the block
and have to make new friends, especially when you're 13 years old, which is a very transitional time of life.
And dragging four siblings along with you, I suppose, you show the way and show a bit of leadership.
That's right. And I don't know, in some ways I wasn't a great big brother. I think I was a bit standoffish when it came to my siblings. Probably the most traumatic thing that happened during that whole period of time is that my brother died. The 60s, and he was a full-blown hippie, and unfortunately he went to live with his girlfriend at her father's house, and they had a scuffle, and the guy shot him. And that was a big deal, as you can imagine.
Yeah. I mean, that's taking shotgun wedding a little bit too far.
Oh. Yes, unfortunately, that's the case. And, you know, I still to this day miss him because he was a great brother and probably the closest of my siblings to me. But you know, my father ended up being in real estate. He wasn't a great real estate agent. My mother became a supervisor of nursing at the local hospital, and she was really the economic star of the two of them. Yeah. He just sort of bumped along. She was quite good at what she did, and did all the work at home, and had a major full time job. So
yeah.
I did as much as I could to help out. With my siblings under those circumstances.
So what was your street like? What was your house like? Was it one of the big wide open?
It was on a suburban street, one and a half story house. My father had actually built that house for us. One of the things that he did as a contractor and real estate agent was we lived in four different houses in my youth, and each one of those houses he was responsible for building. So he had built us a nice house. I cut the grass and was the major gardener for the family, and I resented the hell out of it. But it was, you know, it was just that was my job.
That was a chore.
That was my big major chore, was doing the gardening around the house. But it was a nice street. There were lots of kids in the neighborhood. So it was a time when you could just go out and play. Unlike today, yeah, where kids, largely stay at home. Parents are much more protective of their children. I would be out all day playing ball or playing with the kids in the neighborhood, and then come home whenever it got dark and whenever it was time for dinner.
Or hungry.
That's right. In many ways, it was an idyllic childhood, and my wife had a more traumatic childhood, traumatic youth, in some ways, I never appreciated that. It was just the life that I had, the life that I lived. Grew up in a Christian church. Both my brother and my brother-in-law ended up being ministers in the church. The nursing is in my family, so I have nurses in my family. It's interesting how sometimes those professions just kind of follow, family groups, and it's kind of the family profession.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey guys, it's Joel from Momentous Experience here. How you going? If you listen to people that I catch up with here and around the world talking about their mental health, the challenges they face, and how they've managed it. It's all about spreading awareness and promoting a peaceful and balanced life. So join me again, Momentous Experience, on Spotify, Apple, and Google.
So what was your middle school like?
Yes.
So you
middle school.
I guess that was when you went to a new school, was it?
Right. We had moved from a larger town to a smaller town. And just before we moved, I had broken my collarbone playing basketball. And I had this figure eight bandage on my back. And at the new school, I didn't really mention that I had a broken collarbone. I don't know why. I guess I was just kind of quiet and scoping the place out. I only found out years later that they thought I was a hunchback for a while because I had this figure eight bandage.
The Bells, Ed Smerelda, that one.
but eventually that healed up. I took the bandage off. You know, it's hard to go into a small town where everybody knows everybody as a new person and try and get to kind of know the kids and know the people and all of that. Fortunately, I played sports, and that made it easier for me to make an entry into the society of a middle school. And it made it it made it easier to make friends, I guess, was the point.
Yeah. So I suppose if you was good at sport, particularly if you're a quarterback, I mean, it could go either way. I mean, if they've got a really good quarterback and you're coming in and you're better than he is and you're treading on his toes, it might turn against you on that one.
Yes.
But no,
it actually worked out. And we kind of shared, as it turned out, shared quarterback duties.
Well, you have to have a replacement now and then. I played American football, but I played on the defense. I was an outside linebacker or a defensive end occasionally. And yes. I had a ball.
Yes.
It's good fun.
I also played a lot of rugby.
Yeah.
Yes.
I played a lot of rugby, which is a different game altogether.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it is. I never played rugby, but it certainly looked like an interesting game.
Yeah, absolutely. So, middle school then. So you was obviously good at sports. What else was you good at? What was your favourite subject? What is the subject you wanted to get up to school for? Get up early and get to school to do?
I was good at school, and I applied myself. I particularly liked math and history. I had good teachers as I look back on it. You know, life was simpler then. You know, life was simpler in the 50s and 60s. In some ways, it was idyllic compared to today. You know, not nearly as much stress, not nearly as much upheaval going on in society. Childhood was fun. I enjoyed it a lot. Through high school, I became a member of the student council. I became the president of the student council. I was basically a higher achiever, if you will.
Did you get into
really enjoyed the experience?
Yeah. Did you get into any of the arts at all? Did you do any of that, or you just concentrated on sports and the academics?
I didn't. Yeah, sports and academics is really what my focus was. I never intended to be an author the way I am now. Never intended to do any writing. I certainly didn't have any aspirations for doing that in my childhood and my youth, even through college. I went to a smaller school, played football, but I was a little on the small side. And when they wanted to move me to an outside linebacker position, you were talking about that.
Yeah.
I was just getting beat up by the big kids. And eventually I just said, no, I think I'm done with this.
You just have to go lower.
I don't really want to do this anymore. This is not fun. I'd wake up in the morning and dread going to practice. And I decided after a couple of years that was not the way that I wanted to spend my time. It's not the way I wanted to spend my life. Now, it was a school that had a lot of very well-educated, and in many cases, private school. Educated boys. So everybody got there as kind of a star from where they came from, but then everybody was a star and had to get it all sorted out. I intended to go to medical school, but I washed out of organic chemistry. And I was taking courses, really too many courses, upper level courses for while I was playing football at the same time. So after a couple of years, I decided I was just going to get through college, got a degree in political science. And at the end of that period of time, decided to go with my friend to San Francisco. I'd introduced him to a young lady from the San Francisco area. And at the end of the summer, he said, well, let's go to San Francisco. And I said, well, okay, let's do it. So we packed up his small car. I had half of a small Chevrolet to move in and headed off for San Francisco. Within about 6 months, he had proposed, she had accepted, and they moved back to North Carolina and they left me in San Francisco.
that's a bit antisocial of a minute.
Really, it was terrible.
Selfish.
But it was such a great place to live. Now, I had almost had to come back because I didn't have that much money when I moved out there. I had a degree in political science, which meant I had almost no marketable skills except for construction. Because my dad was an architect and a builder, I would work with him during the summertime, and I learned some of those skills. And that's what allowed me to stay in San Francisco. I started remodeling old Victorian houses in downtown San Francisco. I did that for 4 or 5 years and then decided, oh, this is too hard, too much work. I'm going to go back to school and got a degree in political science. And it was at that point that I started working for the state of California and finally was in a white-collar job instead of a blue-collar job.
Mm. So you went into politics effectively then?
Well, it was really more just working for the state of California. They had a department, the retirement system, that I began to work in. And what I did was to help people figure out their retirement and how much money they were going to make and what that was going to be like. So it was an ongoing process of really consulting people. And a lot of my career really has been consulting in one way or another. That was retirement consulting. But ultimately, I became a business consultant and did that kind of work for about 25 years.
Mm. So the political sciences then, what was involved with that?
Well, it was really government. It was really government. It was learning how government works, how to be a bureaucrat, essentially, and how to go into some area of government and make your way in that, and how government works, how to be a leader and a follower, and how to maneuver in government service, essentially.
Hmm. So, did you ever come
across? A master's degree was really helpful, to do that. I mean, it gave me a chance to get into a higher level position to begin with.
Hmm. So, did you work for any one particular area, or was it just the state government? The state.
It was state government, but it was in the retirement area. So, they had a whole department whose responsibility. California's a big state. They had one department whose sole responsibility was to administer the retirement program for state of California employees. And it was in that department that I worked for almost 5 years.
Mm. Yeah. So did you have any ambitions at all becoming sort of a senator or a mayor, anything like that?
No. Actually, my intention was to become a city manager, and in the States, city manager is the person who's responsible, who's the main chief executive in the city. But it turned out in California, because assistant city manager is usually the entry point into that profession, in California there were so many people who were looking for similar types of jobs that the entry level job that I anticipated going into was already taken up by people who had experience at that. And it was hard for me to get in. So it was at that point that I went to work for the state retirement system.
All right. Because say the reason most people, go to California is to go to the movies and end up waitressing while waiting to get sort of discovered. So you didn't have any ambitions of that then?
No. That, and of course, that's Southern California and Los Angeles and where the movies are and all of that.
Yeah.
But no, that was not a an aspiration of mine to go into the entertainment business.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So you spent 5 years then the retirement department. What did you move on to after that?
I actually started a business with a couple of other guys, teaching people how to build and remodel their own homes. We had all been in the construction trades. And one of the guys had a little business of teaching classes. And we decided that we would do is take what he was doing and try and roll it out in a big way in the San Francisco area. And we ended up being fairly successful at that. The program was called the Owner Builder Center. We had classes and workshops and seminars. We had a summer program, almost like Tom Sawyer, where we would go up into the mountains and we would enroll people. They would come for a couple of weeks and they would work on somebody else's house. That's the Tom Sawyer aspect of it. And in doing that, they got a chance to see what actual construction site was like. And we do hands-on workshops there. And it actually got to be fairly well known. We had an article in Time Magazine on it, for example, at one time. And we're in the Wall Street Journal and some of the other big newspapers around the country. So we did that for about 10 years. And then it just sort of waned in popularity. So we decided to close it up. And it was at that point that I, interestingly enough, moved back to North Carolina because I really wasn't sure what I was going to do next in California. So, but I knew some things that I could do in North Carolina. So I moved back to North Carolina and began my business consulting career, which I did for about 25 years.
Mm. So it's been about 15 years in California, and then you moved back.
20, almost 20, and then moved back to 15, 20, yeah, and moved back to North Carolina there 20 years, and then moved back to California.
Oh, from one side of the country to the other.
That's right.
It's a long, middle at all?
It's a long trip across the country with a van full of your belongings.
So is it Route 66 then?
Well, some 66, but Interstate 40 is the main thoroughfare from one side of the country to the other, and it takes a solid week to drive.
Sounds like a bit of fun, and you stop off at motels on the way, I guess.
That's correct, exactly. Yeah,
brilliant. So bring us a little bit further forward then. So
okay,
what happened to you recently?
So I moved back to California because I wanted to be back in California. In many ways, it felt more comfortable than North Carolina. It's a more open place. It's a more interesting place. People are more awake and aware. It just felt like home. And I wanted to get myself and my wife back to the West Coast because both of my children were on the West Coast. My mother and father had died. And so being back on the West Coast was important. Well, I took a large promotion to a job as assistant state director in the program that I was working in. And so I was all puffed up, you know, I was all director and ego out to here. Turned out that my boss was a psychopath. She was abusing employees. She was mishandling funds. She was really running the program into the ground. But she was a mistress, if you will, of smoke and mirrors. And she kept everybody around her who was supposed to be watching over the program in the dark about what she was doing. And so the higher ups did not know what was going on and were not watching things very closely. And the program was starting to go into the toilet. And so I decided to go to the higher ups and let them know what was going on, because I just couldn't put up with it. It was just more than I could stand. So I went and let them know what was going on, and they did an investigation to see, what is going on here. As a result of the investigation, she was fired, but they fired me too. They said I was a troublemaker. Well, what that essentially meant was that I had made trouble for them by exposing their incompetence in managing the program and overseeing the program. And that was an embarrassment. And this was a community college, a junior college, that had lots of trouble with corruption anyway in recent years. And so this was just an additional embarrassment. And so they decided they would let me go. And that was huge. I mean, that was hugely traumatic. My ego was severely deflated. My income went away. The profession that I had been involved with for almost a 25-year period of time just disappeared overnight. And I didn't really know what I was going to do, because I was kind of in a new place. I'd only been there for a year. And I really did. I mean, I knew some people, but I didn't have a lot of contacts. I didn't have a very big network. Fortunately, I had some resources and was able to spend some time sorting it all out. Now, I had started doing meditation and yoga back when I first moved to San Francisco. So I had been doing meditation and yoga for, 40 years, and decided and then took a deep dive into my meditation practice for therapy. I also started journaling. For therapy.
Did you not?
And just writing about what had gone on.
Did you not sort of take them on for constructive dismissal?
Yes, I did. In fact, I went to the state personnel board. There was a hearing, and the officials from the college just came and lied up one side and down the other. And the judge who was officiating believed them, didn't believe me. And as a result, the case was dismissed. So I really had no recourse as a result of unfair dismissal. But it didn't matter, because they had all the power. I had none. It was during that time,
their corrupt behavior after him left them to it.
Yes, exactly. Mm. And, as I look back at it, Tim, it's one of the best things that could have happened to me, because I also took a deep dive into my meditation practice, began writing for therapy, and after about 150,000 words, realized that I had material for some books, and that I had some come to some understandings or spiritual realizations that I thought would be valuable to people. So it was at that point that I began writing and organizing my my journaling into some manuscripts, and ultimately publishing them on Amazon Books, thus began my now 6-7 year career as an author. During that time, and this is maybe one of the most interesting things that has happened to me in my life, during that time, I began to have what I describe as being soul contact. Now, I think we all have a soul. I think we all have a higher aspect to ourselves, a higher consciousness, if you will. But even during the 40 years or so that I've been doing meditation, I've really never had much of an experience of that. It had been very valuable, the yoga and the meditation. It helped keep me sane during this difficult period of time. It was all very healthy thing to do. It helped deal with the stress of life and all of those sorts of things. But I really never had an experience of, again, what I would call soul contact or contact with higher consciousness. But it was at that point, as I was writing, I began to have realizations and understandings that really didn't seem like me, because I hadn't gone that deep yet. But things began to pour through my fingers onto the keyboard that were quite, in many ways, startling, and the material for the books that I've written. And I think that in one way or another, we're all destined to have that experience of soul contact. But it may or may not happen in this lifetime, depending on how interested we are in such things and how much we pursue that. But that it's something that's available to anybody at any time they turn their time and attention to that if they're interested in those sorts of things. Now, most of us are indoctrinated, and I would say this about myself, most of us are indoctrinated from the time that we become human beings on planet Earth, that, you know, this is kind of a tough world. And in many ways, planet Earth is a tough world. It's not an easy place to live. It's not an easy place to make a living. It's not an easy place to succeed. And you hear about it being a dog-eat-dog world, and there's a definite element of that in life for people. So I think we're all sort of indoctrinated, or if you will, even hypnotized into our human beingness and three-dimensional reality. And many of us, even those of us who are spiritually oriented or go to church or whatever, really don't have much contact with what I call five-dimensional reality, which is what I think is spirit, and it's where we come from, and it's where we go back to. You know, when we take our last breath here, we're going to take our next breath on the other side, which is five-dimensional reality is what I like to speak of it as. But that having soul contact is a, it's one of the most accomplished things that a three-dimensional being can do. To begin to have a sense of spirit here now, as opposed to waiting till you get on the other side to have that experience where you kind of reunite with that part of it, part of the ego. I don't want to say human experience, part of the eternal being experience is what I like to talk about. Yeah. So that's a lot of then what I've been writing about in recent years is meditation, how to meditate. So I've offered tools in my book for better ways of meditating. I've offered tools in my book for learning to manifest things spiritually in your life. Because I think that we're all creators, if you will, of our own reality. Yeah. That every decision that we make today is going to result in some element of what's going to go on tomorrow. And I also think, and this goes to a spiritual law called the law of attraction, that the kind of energy we give off, or vibration that we give off, is what comes back to us. So if we're more positive and upbeat in life, the likelihood is that there'll be a more positive, that we'll live a more positive and upbeat life. If we're, on the other hand, for whatever reason, and often because of trauma, more depressed and more unhappy, then the likelihood that unhappy things will happen in our life is greater. Because of that law of attraction, whatever you give off comes back to you. Whatever kind of energy or vibrational frequency we emanate is what begins to return to us. And it's one of the major values of doing meditation, because it allows you to rise up in your vibrational frequency. It allows you to rise up in your degree of being awake and aware. It allows you to rise up in your consciousness. And as a result, I think you're more likely to have a better life. That's one of the benefits of meditation.
Absolutely.
I know I covered a lot right there.
Yeah. I believe in positive mental attitude and
yes,
and always having a half glass, a glass half full to overflowing. Yes. The people that have got a half empty glass and they're miserable and they don't have any positivity about them, you can just see that they're living a miserable life. They don't like what they're doing. They don't like the job they're in. They don't like this. They don't like that. But they won't go and do anything about it because they don't know anything else.
That's
not until you get thrown a curveball and a brand new challenge that then you have to do something about it. And I think your way of doing it is not bad, actually. A pretty good way of going about dealing with something that's happened. Had the rug pulled down from under you for highlighting something that was wrong and in itself.
And there's an opportunity. There's an opportunity in that situation to reinvent yourself and to reimagine who you are and what you can be and what you can do.
Yeah.
Things happen for a reason, I think. And I think this actually happened to me because it was time for me to finish doing what I was doing and to take on something else to do the job that I'm doing now rather than the job that I used to do. Yeah. So I think in some ways I thank the people who fired me, even though it was incredibly disrespectful and disruptive at the time.
Yeah, I mean, you must feel a little bit of what should we say, resentment, a little bit of injustice that's been thrown at your way for trying to highlight something that was wrong in the first place. They probably did it for a reason because they were probably corrupt themselves.
Well, they were trying to protect themselves, yes. There was a degree of dysfunctionality that was going on in this organization. It's one of the reasons why this woman continued as my boss, continued to be the leader of this organization. It was, the whole place was just kind of had a musty, dusty, and corrupt feel to it.
Yeah, I mean, toxic management isn't the best thing in the world, is it? Let's face it. You can kind of tell when you walk into a place that it doesn't feel right. It feels toxic. You feel that people aren't happy working there, and then you're there for a while, and you can see why, because the management just sucks.
Well, ultimately, yes. I mean, so often it's the leader. So often it's the leader or the management or the manager that is the problem with an organization. And if they're not good leaders, if they're not good managers, if they don't know how to build a team, if they're not, themselves positive, if they don't act in a, I like to use the servant leader approach to management in the leadership positions where my job is really to serve the people who work with me, not for me, the people in my team to do their jobs, most effectively and most efficiently, and to build up the group to high performing outcomes. But it takes somebody who sees that as a better way to manage than beating people over the head to try and get them to do something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I was in the army, I led by example. I felt that I wouldn't expect anybody to do what I wouldn't do myself.
Yeah.
So I'd lead by example. And that way I found that I built up loyalty with the guys that worked for me. They would follow me anywhere. They appreciated who I was. And if I had to shout, then I wasn't doing my job right. If I had to shout, I'd got something wrong. So I think it's far more impactful to be quiet, calm and collected when something's going wrong, and just to discuss it with them rather than shout and bawl at them.
Right.
And that kind of gets better results in the long run.
No, it's much more fun. It's much more impactful. To be in an organization that's high functional, and where people get along, and where leadership is competent and effective and perhaps even compassionate.
Yeah, absolutely. So Blair, where can people get your books?
I publish my book at Amazon Books. I have 5 now on Amazon Books. So anybody who's interested in my books can just go to Amazon Books, and they can Google in Blair Abey, and they can find my book series, which is called Higher Consciousness series of books. It includes several books on meditation, a book on manifestation, and even a poetry book. I never expected to be a poet, and sometimes poetry is the best way to express things in words that are harder to express in prose. Sometimes I just get the notion of writing some poetry, after doing that for a couple of years, began to collect that into one single book, which is part of the 5 book series.
So you're a bit like Robbie Burns then.
Actually my favorite poet is Rumi, and he's the person I kind of dedicate this book of poetry to.
Fantastic. Well, Blair, I've really enjoyed this little chat.
This has been fun. Yes, absolutely.
It's quite a fascinating story, really.
Well, thank you. I worked hard at it. I continue to be an achiever.
Time to retire then.
Well, what I'm doing is really fun. I'm not sure if I'm ever going to fully retire, because I enjoy what I do, and people like the material that I generate on my website, in my books, on the podcast. I've been guesting on podcasts recently. It seems like the ideas that I have, the messages that I have, the tools that I offer people is valuable and useful and helpful, really offers people an opportunity to wake up and just rise up in their a level of awareness, and again, that leads to a better life.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for enlightening us. And so, while you're enjoying it, just carry on. When you stop enjoying it, that's the time to stop.
That's when you want to stop. Well, I appreciate that. This has really been a lot of fun, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be on your show.
You're most welcome.
The Tim Hill Podcasts, ordinary people's extraordinary stories.
Welcome to the Tim Hill Podcast. If you have the time, you can not only listen to the episodes, but you can also watch all the shows, and you'll find the links in the description below. Thank you.